again there, folks. Well, I thought I would have a bit of a chat about what's going on down in Dover with the asylum seekers, with the general situation, with the fact that the Tory government just don't seem to want to do anything about it, that the numbers seem to be getting out of control. You've got Suella Braverman in Parliament talking about how it's an invasion. The other day, there was a bit of unpleasantness. Somebody made some kind of homemade bomb and threw it at one of the migrant detention centres. It's a real thing of the moment. And I thought I would do a bit of a deep dive and peel back some of the layers behind of it, because it's been on my mind for a while. By the way, I haven't got a script. This is going to be more like a live stream. I'm going to wing it, like sort of old school. I've got some things to go through, so I'll make cough and go off on rants from time to time. But the reason why I got interested in it, because I began thinking about it just from the perspective of the Tory party. Now, we all know the Tory party treat the people who voted for them with contempt. They're traitors, they're scum. But even from a purely Machiavellian sort of power analysis, I didn't understand why the Tories just did not stop the flow coming in Dover. Before I actually get carried away with it, let's get a couple of things out the way for any passing shitlibs who feel like reporting this video. I'm not going to talk about the background of the asylum seekers themselves. I'm not going to break YouTube's terms and conditions. I'm not going to make any slurs about people's ethnicity or their religion or all of these other things. What I'm interested in is in why our government treats us with so much contempt. And you know, another thing for the, like, any passing leftist, like, this is the stuff that leftists used to do, what I'm about to do here. It used to be, before leftists became enthralled to the kind of corporate globalized message, before you forgot about economics and began to get into all of that rainbow stuff, like, when back in the days when the left were actually socialists, and not just, like, whatever the hell they are now, waving all, like, just constantly promoting all of this filth and disgust and stuff. Like, back when the left stood up for the common man, this is the kind of content they'd make. And another thing is, for the regular viewers, some of this stuff is going to boil your piss. There's probably a few people know where I'm going to go with it. So remember, the one thing the power structure does want you to do is become a problem that they have to solve, just like that fella the other day who made those bombs. So don't do violence, don't be incited to it. But I understand, like, people are... The centre-right explanation for what happened was that this fella had been driven to his wit's end. So whatever, it's becoming an increasingly fraught and highly flammable situation. So with all of that out of the way, the thing that I didn't really get was why the Tory government were just not solving this problem. They were not doing anything about it, and the numbers were going increasingly all of the time. So you can just, like, kind of, if we have a look at this chart here, in 2018 it's relatively low. And then in 2019 it goes up. I mean, in 2018 it's very low. 2019 starts to increase, and you can see where we're reaching for what will probably break 40,000 people just coming across the channel on dinghies and entering the country as they seem to wish. You also then get knock-on problems with this, where or like sort of Daily Mail headlines, where they're being put up in hotels, it's costing us billions. They seem to be just getting, they're getting the red carpet rolled out for them. We're hit with inflation, we're hit with the energy problems, we've got all of these issues already in the country, and then there's, like, this free flow of people. I understand as well that we're talking specifically here about the Dover issue and not about the hundreds of thousands who are just, like, literally flying into the country. But then again, You see, at least, like, again, when you just accept the fact that we're not ruled by people who actually care about our well-being, which we're not, even then, like, I can, from their perspective, the all of the people coming in via the airports with family reunion, that's kind of out of sight. That's kind of... The numbers go up. I mean, as I understand it, the census has decided to scrap how they count their national background, ethnicity, and this kind of thing. That remains to be seen, but that seems to be where that's going. So in a way, it's kind of just simmering away in the background, the numbers coming in. I've got to be careful because I'm on YouTube, of course, and there's certain words beginning with R that we're not allowed to use. So what I found strange about the Dover situation was that it was just constantly on the front pages of the, say, like the Express or the Daily Mail. You actually do have Tory politicians coming out, the odd one, who they seem to want to get rid of course, who are saying, well, this is ridiculous, this can't go on, this is, everybody sees it. And it is. So they are deliberately alienating their base through this. So even if we accept that they don't really give two shits about the people who voted for them, then it, you're still left with the problem that this is like undermining their credibility. This is a problem which they should have to get on top of, and they're just not. And it's just like gnawing away at their support, which it is. I mean, their support is flatlined. So when you actually, just to get back to basics here, let's have a look at where they're coming from. Where, this is from the BBC. Where are the people crossing the channel come from? They're coming from Albania, which is not a country at war. They're coming from Afghanistan, which isn't at war either, just not a particularly nice place to live. And then we get this roll call of countries where they're coming in from. As I say, I'm not going to break YouTube's terms and conditions. I'm just pointing out what's on the BBC there. And then we can have a look again. People crossing the English Channel, we're going to break 40,000. It's been steadily rising. And then you get the people arriving, which is another thing which is kind of runs alongside this. And as we can see here, again, from the Home Office, published by the BBC, people arriving are mainly men under 40, boat arrivals by age, group and sex, January to June 2022. So that's kind of, you know, what the centre-right say about this term of fighting age men, because it sounds kind of scary, you know. It's true. Like, it is true. And you can also see there's very few women coming in. So we're talking about young men being allowed to just flood into a nation, which, let's not forget, is an island. And one of the things, one of the sort of the reasons which is trotted out as to why this has happened, I don't believe any of this stuff, by the way. I don't care about these. You'll hear stories about criminal gangs, and then you'll hear about how they actually managed to get through France and all of this. This network, like, at the end of the day, the question comes down to whether or not we have a nation. If you have a nation, you have a border, and in this case, it's the English Channel. It's the, let's just say, the White Cliffs of Dover is where our country begins. The government, if you are a government, you are there to protect that border. If you are not doing that, then you need to fuck off. And what we will see here is that we are ruled by some of the most corrupt pieces of shit you can ever imagine. But before we jump into that, I want to take a punt at this thing, which is what people will point out as the European Court of Human Rights. So whenever there's this is what the government use as an excuse. One of the things they trot out is the European Court of Human Rights, which is, I mean, just as a side point here, this is one of the ugliest buildings I have ever seen in my life. That is absolutely hideous. But of course, the ugliness is inside as well. The European Court of Human Rights is supposedly there to protect our rights, obviously, our free speech. We, because of the European Court of Human Rights, we are not seeing things that happened in World War II, for example. We're not being persecuted. We don't have gulags and all of this. We don't have people being lined up with in firing squads and thrown in pits. All of these kinds of horrors. Now, supposedly, the European Court of Human Rights is there to protect all of that. In actual fact, it's a nonsense. Because if a nation is free to just leave, so if you got a country that did want to go rogue and did want to go sort of full Soviet Union or whatever, they would just leave it and then do that anyway, and they wouldn't have any comebacks. And it's based on this World War II, the sort of the founding ethos of the European Court of Human Rights, and is based on this post-World War II kind of liberalism. And what you find is that when you look at the sort of edicts and the way things have gone, people appealing to things, people who've been done for things on hate speech, or saying things about certain religions or questioning certain things that happened in history, you'll find that they still get done. They'll appeal to the European Court of Human Rights and they just will not help them out at all. There's one or two exceptions. So it has like an inbuilt sort of universalist liberal values, which is always on the lookout for problems with European people on the right, problems with Christianity. They will always side against them. It isn't actually this kind of universal thing at all, because the post-World War II morality isn't either. It is specifically against European people. It's against traditional European values. And what it is a one-way sort of conduit which the rest of the world is fine. If you're outside of the European Court of Human Rights, no problem. But the problem is, in Europe, it acts as a kind of one-way system where the people under the European Court of Human Rights, which is to say us and the continent, they have this universal morality enforced on them, but other people do not. So it's not universal. It's just a way to kind of disintegrate European identity, which has been formalised after World War II. It's a one-way street. It only kind of works in that direction. But what it does is act as a convenient kind of piñata for local governments to bash at when they can't do things which are, say, on the right. So when they can't protect their own borders, or when they want to remove certain people from the country, where it's always in that direction. And you'll always find that the European Court of Human Rights is blocking it. But it'll not, for example, step in and say hate speech laws are against the liberal principles of free speech, because they've added an exception in there, you see. So yes, we are for this universal liberal system. We do protect your right to say what you want, except in these cases, and those cases are always affect the political right in a way that they don't affect the left. I'll put it that way. So even if you did want to go full kind of fash, some government in Europe, they could just walk out of that anyway and then carry on doing what they want to do. So what it exists as is an institution above the national government, who the national government can just throw up their hands and say, well, we can't do these things. We can't actually protect the nation because there's this added layer of bureaucracy on top of us. So, sorry, that's just the way it is. And it's convenient for them to pass the buck like that. And then when you say, well, why don't we leave the European Court of Human Rights? You're going to have all of the shit libs and then The Guardian and on the BBC saying that this is kind of like going back to the horrors of World War II. So we're locked into this great con trick. But, you know, that's not going to work anyway. That's why you can't get rid of them. You can't get anybody out of your country. So it actually gets worse. So if we go back to why the asylum seekers are coming in. So we've touched on the European Court of Human Rights. There's another side to this that I want to touch on as well. Okay, so we've got all of these people coming in, the government's not stopping it, and we have to ask a question, why? Now, there's a bit of a stopgap that they've come up with, which is costing hundreds of millions of pounds, which is that they're putting the asylum seekers up in hotels, which seems ridiculous. And here we have, just as an example, there's so many of these headlines. Firm managing hotels for UK asylum seeker posts bumper profits. Three directors of Clear Springs Ready Home share dividends of almost £28 million as profits rise sixfold. So here we get on to the next step of the problem. The asylum seekers are coming in, they're arriving at Dover, and then they're being, well, whether or not they're being processed is one of the hot button issues. But they need somewhere to stay, and they are being put up in hotels all across the country, which is just, it's just absolutely ridiculous. But that's like a short-term fix. And so what the government have done have created a problem. A problem which is already exacerbated by the sheer amount of people coming into this country, once again, driving up just how hard it is, the cost of finding somewhere to live for people, working people who slaving away in these dead-end jobs. And then it's like, well, we're going to have to find somewhere to live. This is made yet more difficult. And then even like the Tories, I did a video a long time ago, they're one of their main funders are, of course, the construction companies. So what they're doing is creating a problem, and then their mates who funded their campaigns in the construction companies will be happy to oblige with all of these new build houses, which destroys the green belt. Boris Johnson ripped up all of the regulations and whatnot. So we're turning into this kind of large slab of concrete, like Air Force One style, this kind of giant slab of an aircraft carrier type thing, you know, off the coast of Europe. It's a purely materialistic kind of, but you'll see the kind of the shills, like Daniel Hannan or that other one, Tom Harwood. They all come out with this, and what they do is fall back on these kinds of neoliberal economics, where there is, like, this is the what the Tories stand for, is that there's just this, everything is just economics. It's just line goes up on the graph. There's nothing about actually belonging anywhere. There's nothing about being. You'll also notice that if you have this kind of mindset with just this worship of the free market, it is impossible to actually conserve anything. You can't conserve anything if you are reducing your nation to a giant production plant or a supermarket. It doesn't make any sense. These two principles are mutually exclusive. It can't be done. You'll notice that the older school conservatives who got purged and shunned, people like Roger Scruton, that Penny Mordaunt even has a book where she slags Roger Scruton off because, of course, she, like Sunak and like all of the rest of them, are just these corporate managers. They none of them have any sense of a moral obligation to the people of the country. They are entirely about the line going up on the graph. So this is where they've created this problem, and now they're going to have to find a way to solve it. And so to solve it, we bring in this company called Serco, bringing service to life. So this is a giant sort of... Well, we'll get on to what they are, but it's actually run by... I think he may just be leaving, but it was Winston Churchill's grandson. And we can click on to see what they're about. Oh, well, look at this. Calling all landlords. We are looking for landlords, investors and agents with properties available in the Northwest, Midlands or East of England. All types of properties are required. Calling all landlords. So what is it that they're up to then? Well, let's take a look at their website a little bit further. Long-term lease available for 5+ years with no void periods. rent paid in full on time of every month with no arrears, repairs and maintenance, full repair and maintenance lease, excluding late. They're basically just throw everything you want, utility bills. They're even going to pay the council tax. So you've seen where this is going to go already. Property management, no fees, no letting or management costs. So from the landlord's perspective, this is like their dreams come true. They're going to pay a lease avail 5 years with no void periods. So from the landlord's, this is a massive, huge incentive for landlords to sign up with Serco and do what they want. Now, of course, here we see again, prospective landlords and investors. Basically, what they're going to do is take on the asylum seekers. They're going to flood they're going to waive all of this money and all of these sweet deals in the face of landlords across the countries. All landlords, pay attention. We're coming to give you all of these goodies. We're going to make you rich. But the problem is, there's British people in these properties already renting them, and they can't compete with this. They cannot compete with these generous offers from this giant corporation in terms of just keeping a roof above their heads. So the problem of what they're going to do with all of these people coming in, which the government are allowing in, is that they are going to start, by, I don't see any way around it, evicting the native population, the people of Britain, were working class people in here, the northwest, Midlands or east of England, will be getting evicted, and the Serco's portfolio, as they will call it, of asylum seekers will come in. So this also is a full description of what's on their website. Serco provides asylum accommodation and support services in the northwest of England, Midlands and east of England. Our purpose is the provision of accommodation, transportation and subsistence payments for asylum seekers whilst their claims are being processed. We are responsible for over 30,000 asylum seekers in an ever-growing portfolio. You'll notice here, I mean, this is kind of why I wanted to get over this kind of thing about where people are going to focus on the asylum seekers themselves, because I mean, they're being spoken about here as like an asset which a corporation can be used to make a profit, to grift. Now, I know I sound like a kind of bleeding heart lefty here, but this is the kind of reality of the power at play. This is why they're being allowed in the first place. This is these are the structural problems that we're facing. A portfolio of more than 6,000 properties. Our operating model is based on leasing properties from a wide network of landlords, investors and agents, with Serco acting as a tenant. So what they mean is, like, so it's the asylum seeker will kind of just be completely taken care of, because if they smash the place up, if there's any damage, Serco are going to pay for it. They're going to pay 5 years rent up front. They're going to pay for the utilities. You know, they're going to pay for the internet. They're even going to pay for the council tax. And you may think, well, how is this business model possible? You know, where does a corporation get the money from? How does a corporation actually do this? Are they just a bunch of swell guys? Are they just like really, is it like just a giant charity of like lovey-dovey liberals? Well, no, it isn't. So it gets worse. So Mears, by the way, Serco, and then Mears win 2.9 billion refugee housing contract. This is in 2018. This is from Reuters again. It's not a conspiracy site. This is like fact-checking central, everybody. This is Reuters. Now, Mears is something similar to Serco, but their website isn't as flashy. But they are the ones operating in the northeast where I am, and I rent. So if I'm evicted, this is where we are now. You know, this is where we've been brought to. So is my landlord going to be give like a flashy offer from Mears where they're operating, circles in other parts of the country? Also, I will say, also parts of the country which are quite high in sort of, they're quite poor. And that makes sense because, okay, the government's given them 2.9 billion refugee, the money, the budget, to provide accommodation and support for asylum seekers, lifting shares in both outsourcing firms. So the government has outsourced the housing of the asylum seekers to these corporations. Now, if I'm evicted, you know, or my family or and all my friends, or, you know, is it then because Mears has offered the landlord like a swanky deal of 5 years rent to house people that the government have allowed in from Dover? Well, to be honest, yes. I don't see how there's a way around it. I'm looking at this and thinking the government have in 2018 signed a contract with this corporation. Which where are these houses coming from? They're not empty, are they? So when the reason why, by the way, they're giving such a high incentive to landlords is, it seems to me, because they know the landlords will not be able to resist. Now, I did a little bit of browsing on Twitter, and I saw a few of the kind of shit libs, and they were saying it's false information because the landlord is not being forced to evict British people, which is true, he's not. But these people are thick and they don't understand incentive structures. They don't understand that when you wave a load of money in somebody's face, they will do what you want them to do. And they will live with the guilt of kicking a family out onto the street. And they'll get around that by saying they're going to do some renovation or that they're going to sell the property. So what's happened here? Let's take it from the top. The government are allowing in all of these people who, regardless of their background, they need to be housed. That's happening now. We saw before it began in 2018, there was very few people coming in. It's been going up year on year since then. We're in 2022, it's gone through the roof and it is hitting 40,000. Now, here's the thing. The contract with Serco was signed in 2018. Now, what would have happened if the government had decided to clamp down? And let's just say, well, let's just put it this way. Let's just say the government maintained the 2018 levels. Well, the problem with that is that Serco would be, their portfolio wouldn't be looking too great. They'd have all of this money for nothing. So it seems to me the government knew that they were going to need this. They knew in 2018 already that they would need to outsource all of this housing crisis to a private company. And so all of this was a setup from the beginning. Otherwise, why did they give out nearly $3 billion in 2018 to Serco and Mears? So, like, do you see the problem here? So on the situation with incentives, again, these are things that socialists used to understand, leftists used to understand, but now they don't. Now it's about gender stuff and all of that. And you can see why. You can see how the left got cooked by all of these corporations, by the power structure. It was that these kind of secondary issues were out on the periphery of leftism. They were brought in right into the centre of their thinking. And then the economic stuff, structural issues with economics, that all got pushed out. What they will do at a push now is probably say that this is why you need to get the government to build more houses or something like that. You know, it's not solving the problem. This is a massive, in my view, it seems to just be a huge scam. So here we can see, in 2020 and thereafter, we expect the AAS, I don't know what that means, contracts to be materially positive to both profitability and cash flow. It's a business model. Bringing the people in is a business model. This is your country. This is what, this is the Conservatives, and it's consistent with Conservative thinking. It's like, I don't want to hear any more of these Tory boy corps about how this is incompetence. It isn't. It's just, well, what we're going to get to, it's a public-private partnership. It is a business model, and it's trampling all over the people of England, and it's going to end up with a mass homeless crisis of the people whose country this is. I find it to be an absolute sickening and disgusting thing to be engaged in. It really does make me sick to the pit of my stomach. It's what they're doing here. Mia's, I guess they're the one that's operating Northeast, which specialises in social care and housing services, the only newcomer to the asylum contract, you know? Since 2012, the sources told Reuters, Serco has won the contract for the northwest of England. We've been through that, where about 20,000 asylum seekers are living. So this is a few years old, a lot more now. Mia's has been awarded contracts for Scotland, Northern Ireland and the North East, Yorkshire and the Humber. So the government gives out billions of pounds to private corporations. The private corporations then use that money to wave in the faces of landlords. Landlords have now an incentive to evict the British people in their homes, out of their homes, out onto the streets. And let's not forget, where does the money come from for the government to do that? So you look, you go to work, you know, you pay your tax, you come home, you try and get a little bit over for the wife and the kids, you're taxed to death. That tax then goes to the government. The government then give your tax to a private corporation. The private corporation then waves that in the face of a landlord. The landlord has now a very strong incentive. No lefties, he isn't being forced to do it, but it is an incentive. The landlord then says, I'm going to take that deal. I'll live with the guilt later. You and your family are out on the street. It beggars belief that this is allowed. This should be criminal. So just before we move on, there's another aspect to this, which is, it relates back to the construction companies. And it's the simple fact that these are the kinds of corporations who will fund the Tory party. They will pay for the election campaigns, you know. And so if the Tories go back on the deal, if they prevented the flow of people coming in, these companies are going to have to take a hit. And that means that when they take a hit, they're not going to be so friendly to the Tory party, who, from their perspective, would have sort of skanked them and cost them a lot of money. Their business model relies on the Tories doing what they say. And there's a little bit more to it than that. I mean, the corruption, let's just call it what it is. And I don't care, like, you can get wrapped up in all of this legalese, but from a moral perspective, not only is this disgusting, it's corrupt, in my opinion. But the true cancer of the world in the West today is a public-private partnership. Now, I've got a lengthy article on my Substack about this, but it isn't related to the asylum and immigration thing. This is the first time I've noticed it. As being a factor in the asylum and immigration thing. But if you look at what the kind of the technocrats, they always use this phrase, public-private partnership, which sounds bland. It sounds banal and boring and bureaucratic. But it's actually something which I think is the true cancer of the world today, and largely responsible for why we're living in this series of endless crises. If you go back and you look at the pandemic, you'll see that it was public-private partnerships played a massive role in all of that, where what you get is the government, the public, in lockstep with the private. So the public come up with a problem. The public side of the equation, which is, say, the government, come up with a problem. And what they do is then outsource that problem to the private sector. And this then creates its own incentive, so that there has to be more crises. There has to be more emergencies fed into the private sector. Otherwise, they're not going to be very happy. Think about, the problem of the pandemic and why I don't like being on YouTube anymore and prefer Substack is because I can speak freely. But if you look at some of the issues around the private sector, the pandemic, and then just consider for a second all of the times that the you had the emergency, if you want to call it that, let's just go with it. The problem was there. The solution would be provided for by the private sector with the government giving them the money. I mean, there's a more controversial aspect to this, but let's just say the masks would be one which I can get away with talking about on YouTube, I think. So all of a sudden, the private sector had to come up with millions of masks, and there were other things as well. You'll hear people like Klaus Schwab coming out with this, or it's like stakeholder capitalism. The private part of the equation has a stake in society. It has an interest. And so in the case of the asylum seekers, you can see what that is. It is where they are getting into the nitty-gritty with government itself, and government is paying them and making them money. It's one sort of interlocking thing. It's this sort of Scylla and Charybdis in Greek mythology is the public-private partnership, in my view. You will see something like climate change is the big one. That's their big baby, where all of this locks in together, where they basically the world will end unless there is these gigantic infrastructural projects to net carbon zero and all of the, I mean, it's with the digitization, it's with everything. And here, just on this graph here, you can kind of see it. Public-private partnership is a contractual agreement between a public entity and a private sector to manage public, you'll notice the word there, infrastructure project. So one of the things you'll notice is that this affects us more and more directly in the real world. And it's because of this focus on infrastructure. We've got another one here, public-private partnership. It's the same thing again. You begin to see that kind of the colours of the net zero carbon thing again. And then one more, public-private partnership, a collaboration between a government and private enterprise, often on large, once again, infrastructure projects that the private partner may finance, plan or execute. So the private partner is there to deal with the actual nitty-gritty. And in the case of this video, it is the solving the problem of where to house all of these people. Regardless of any kind of morality, regardless of any sort of concern for the native people, it is we have this problem to solve and we are going to do it. And, well, that's just tough shit if you're the one out on the street. This is going to eventually affect everything about our lives on different issues. But that term, public-private partnership, should strike fear into everybody. You see it once again, this kind of technocratic mindset of modelling, which never takes into consideration how humans actually are. It was all through the pandemic with all kinds of things. It's in with the climate change stuff. And here we see it peeping its head in the issue of asylum and immigration. The problem has been created. It's like they create crises to kind of, because like this big gaping maw of the private side of the partnership always wants to step in and solve all of these problems. If it doesn't have enough problems, then it's going to be out of pocket. Then it's not going to be very good for its portfolio. So it's sickening, you know. People are going to do the always, what do we do about it, instead of complain. They're always weak at the local level. So have a chat with your local councillors and find out if these corporations are on the prowl in your area. Have a word, see what you can do. But what makes it so insidious is that there's kind of things you can do with government, with councillors. But you'll notice another problem with the private is that they bypass all of that and then operate sort of using the rules of the free market, even though they're being bankrolled by the government. This is just outright corruption. It's a horrible, despicable thing. And it's what's creating the world in the 2020s. It's like this cancerous thing which is destroying everything. So I hope I didn't depress you too much, people, but this kind of stuff needs to be pointed out at the structural level more than kind of just focusing on the asylum seekers themselves. This is the problem that we're facing. So thanks for listening, folks, and I'll catch you later.